We'll hear arguments next in the City Council of Los Angeles against taxpayers for Vincent. Mr. Alcorn, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case presents the important constitutional issue of whether the City of Los Angeles may, consistent with the First Amendment, prohibit the attachment of signs to items of public and utility property which are located on and along the city's streets and sidewalks. The city submits that the Constitution permits this regulation. Municipal Code Section 28.04 is the city ordinance at hand. It prohibits the attachment of signs without regard to their content to enumerated items of public and utility property located along the streets. Among those items of property on which signs may not be posted are utility poles and their appurtenances, and in particular with regard to this case, the cross wires which help support those utility poles, traffic and street signs, street lights.
What exactly are the cross wires, Mr. Alp?
The cross wires are a wire or cable which attaches the upright wooden utility pole to another pole on the other side of the sidewalk. And that pole is then attached from the top of the pole on the other side of the sidewalk to the top of the wooden utility pole with a wire, and it helps support the pole in an upright position.
Is any of this private property, Mr. Alcorn?
Some of it is owned by private utility companies, and what's owned by private utilities?
Say some of it, much of it.
Without knowing exactly how many of the utility poles are owned by private utility companies and how much by the city, they're owned either by the city or by the utility companies. Those poles which are owned by the city are leased to the private utilities for their wires. When the private utilities own the utility poles, the city leases space for its wires, and basically these are power wires that the city owns, and communication transmission wires, telephone wires, which the private utilities own. And so they're jointly used. They are located, most of them at least, at the edge of the sidewalk next to the roadway.
You don't think there's any, for First Amendment purposes, any difference between a prohibition against hanging signs from privately owned wires and from publicly owned?
Not with regard to these utility poles. The city is regulating the attachment of signs on these utility poles and on their appurtenances for public policy reasons, for traffic safety reasons, for reasons of safety to workers who need to climb the poles in order to repair wires and other equipment at the top of the poles, and for the purpose of eliminating, to the extent that that is possible, visual clutter, which is directly caused by signs that proliferate on these utility poles, on the cross wires, on city street lighting systems, and on numerous others of these items of property, most of which are public property, which are located on and along the streets and the sidewalk.
In the particular election that was involved here, how many candidates were there for all the public offices on that election day? Have you any idea? Does the record show anything about that?
The record does not show exactly how many there were. There were a number of candidates for this office, at least two, Mr. Vincent, and I believe another non-incumbent who was elected to the city council in that district. There are 15 city council districts, and in half of the years, half of the members run. And in some of the years, we also have a number of citywide offices which run, and there are, of course, always candidates, several candidates for various of these offices. So there are a number of candidates. And signs, of course, are posted not only by candidates and those who support them, but also by others who have both political and non-political messages that they want to display. We have those who espouse viewpoints, positions on public issues, and of course we have those who put up signs for commercial purposes, those who want to invite people to their disco or their dance, or to tell them where they can find the latest built condominium for sale, and those who have garage sales, and those who have merely lost their pets and want them returned if someone finds them. So we see attached to all of these objects many different kinds of signs, not only political signs. In fact, the record indicates that probably the vast majority of the signs that are attached are non-political commercial signs.
Mr. Alpern, following through on Justice Rehnquist's question, on pages 136 and 7 of the appendix, are those photographs of crosswires?
Yes, they are.
How do they affect the safety of the workers involved? Those crosswires are there in any event, aren't they?
Yeah. These signs attached to these crosswires will generally not affect the safety of the workers. However, if you look at the picture on page 136, you will see that the sign is located very, very close to the upright pole. And it is certainly possible that if the sign is attached that close to the pole, that a worker climbing the pole might hit his foot on the sign and lose balance. But generally speaking, signs on these crosswires do not cause a problem for the workers who climb the pole. They cause other problems. They may very well, regardless of their size, hide a traffic hazard. And certainly, they not only add to the visual clutter, but as the district court found, they encourage others to post signs in other unsightly places, and in that way add to the proliferation. One of the problems which the city faces, especially a city like Los Angeles, which is so large, the third largest city in the nation with regard to population, one of the largest with regard to its size. There are 465 square miles approximately of the city, and over 6,400 miles of streets and roadways along which all of these signs are located. These are a great number of signs, and a great number of objects on which signs can be posted and on which signs are posted. When you have all of these objects with signs on them, you have a lot of visual clutter.
What if the people interested in Proposition 10, I take it that's what appears in 136, is it not?
That is correct.
The referendum. What if the people interested in that and wanting to put up their signs came along and saw the signs on 137 for Mr. Marcus, who's running for something, and so they tear down Mr. Marcus's sign and put up Proposition 10? Is there any ordinance or of the city of Los Angeles or statute of the state of California that makes that an unlawful act?
It's not clear whether that's an unlawful act. By destroying someone else's sign, they may very well be committing a misdemeanor, destruction of someone, a malicious mischief, destruction of someone else's property. The proposition could be made, however, that when a sign has been attached illegally to an object of public property or utility property on which it's been prohibited, that it's treated as abandoned property.
It acquires no rights.
We don't believe that someone who puts up a sign acquires any rights. In fact, we believe that when they put up that sign illegally, they lose their rights to the sign. It
would be a great law school exam in a personal property court.
I'm sorry, Mr. Rehnquist, I didn't...
It would be a great law school exam question in a personal property court.
Yes, it certainly would.
Does this... ordinance include a prohibition against the individual homeowner who has a tree or shrub on his property from erecting a pro or con item 10 sign on his property, on his tree or shrub?
The city has generally interpreted this ordinance to apply to signs which are either on city property or on a city parkway. I don't believe that the city has ever attempted to...
There's no exception, as I read 2804.
On its face, it would apply to any tree. It has not, to my knowledge, been construed by the courts. As I say, just from our general knowledge, we don't believe that the city has interpreted it that way. However, the city certainly has a public policy interest in protecting all trees and shrubs in the city without regard to whether or not they are privately owned or publicly owned, because trees and shrubs are a public resource. Having trees and shrubs adds to the beauty of a community. It adds to the vitality of a community.
You mean if I have a tree in my yard, that tree is a public resource?
It's not public property, but certainly having that tree adds to the vitality and to the beauty of that community. And we're not arguing that the city has a right to remove signs that you put up on your own tree. And the city has not interpreted its ordinance to permit it to do that. On its face, there is no exception. The ordinance just says any tree, any shrub.
So even Mr. Marcus, running for office, couldn't put a sign up, please vote on his own home lawn, please vote for me.
Arguably, that's the case, but the city would certainly not seek to enforce its ordinance in that case and wouldn't interpret its ordinance as applying in that case. Unless it's a piece of property which is on the public right-of-way, which is adjacent to the street, there the city certainly has a right, because the city has an easement and indeed in many cases has planted those trees. But if we're talking about a tree otherwise in his yard or in his backyard, somewhere else on his property, we just wouldn't interpret the ordinance as being applicable.
How is this ordinance enforced? Just by city personnel pulling down the signs, is that right?
It is generally enforced by city personnel pulling down these signs. It has also been enforced criminally and could be enforced criminally.
So that conceivably, in Justice Brennan's example, a person could be charged with a crime for putting a sign up on a tree on his own lawn.
Theoretically, that may be possible unless
you read the ordinance
as not applying. And it wouldn't reasonably apply to the tree in his backyard or otherwise in his front yard. And,
it wouldn't reasonably, but literally it does. Well,
yes, we would have
unless
to concede
it's been
that
construed
literally
to the contrary, but yes. No California court has construed the ordinance. Is that right?
To our knowledge, this ordinance has been construed in one unreported case. Not construed, but the constitutionality has been tested in one unreported case of a Superior Court Appellate Department decision. It's an unreported opinion. And in that case, that court ruled that the ordinance might be unconstitutional, sent it back down to the municipal court for an evidentiary hearing as to the facts which might support a valid public purpose. The city lost a motion in the municipal court and did not appeal that. But no, it has not actually been construed, and certainly to our knowledge has not been construed with regard to the question of whether or not a private tree on private property is subject to the ordinance. We don't believe that would be a reasonable interpretation.
Well, this suit was a facial attack on the ordinance, isn't it?
That is right, and this suit is concerned with objects which are located on or adjacent to the public streets, and the litigation did not deal at either the district court level or the level of the Ninth Circuit with questions of trees and shrubs that might be located on someone's own private property, and so that question was just never litigated in this case.
Well, I wouldn't expect it would be if it's a facial attack.
That's certainly correct, but what was litigated And what all of the attention was placed on was the question of whether or not these objects, including trees and shrubs, which are located on and along the streets, are a public forum. The city contends that they are not a public forum, even though they are located on and along the street. A public forum is a place which is either specifically designated by a government as being a public forum or which by tradition has become a public forum. The streets and the sidewalks themselves are a traditional public forum. They are a place which traditionally has been used, among other things, for communication of public issues. They have been legitimately used in that fashion for hundreds of years. In fact, they've probably been used for even longer than that. However, these particular objects of public property, although located in the streets, were erected for quite different reasons. They were erected either so that the city could string its utility wires along the streets in a convenient place, or with regard to the lighting system so that the streets could be lit for safety purposes, or with regard to posts and poles that are erected for the purpose of displaying the city's own traffic and street information, information about where the city's streets are, what street someone may be driving on, how fast that person can drive, where that person can park or not park. They were not erected for the purpose of giving to private individuals the right to put up any sign that they wanted. So they were not designated by the government as a public forum. And indeed, although they have been used in the city of Los Angeles, they have not been used legally or legitimately. The city's ordinance prohibits their use. City contends that an item of government property cannot, by tradition, become a public forum unless it is legitimately used as a public forum. And here, these objects have never been legitimately used as a public forum. They've obviously been used because the signs have been posted and the signs have been removed. But they've been used illegally. And illegal use certainly cannot result in the creation of a public forum, especially where the city has strong public policy interests which are served by its ordinance. And here the city has public policy interests which are directly served by this ordinance, and they are interests which have been recognized by this court over and over again as being substantial, legitimate, even compelling government interests. Certainly traffic safety is a substantial government interest. Certainly aesthetics is a substantial, very important, very legitimate government interest. It relates
Mr. Alper, may I ask a question following up on Justice Brennan's inquiry about signs on private property? I notice in the complaint they allege that they've been advised by the police officer, I guess whoever the duty to enforce, that they will sometimes verify that the sign has been posted without the consent of the owner, agent, or occupant, and then make a physical arrest, which implies, this is, of course, in the complaint, that sometimes the ordinance is enforced against posting on private property.
There is another city ordinance, which is another section of the Municipal Code, section 28.03, which prohibits the attachment of signs to buildings and to any private property without the consent of the owner. In further answer to Mr. Brennan's question and your question following up on that with regard to the trees, certainly because of the existence of that other section, we could construe the reference to trees in section 28.04 to relate only to trees on public property, because we have another section that relates to attachment of signs to private property, and that certainly would include trees on private property, which would be a reasonable interpretation of both ordinances together.
Mr. Alperin, if you look at page 16 of the joint appendix, the Brown, there you have, I believe, Exhibit B, which you filed as one of your exhibits to your answer in the district court. And as I read it, it says the It's a statement that says the policy of the Los Angeles Police Department in enforcing violations, and it describes Section 2803 prohibits the painting or posting of any handbill or sign on private property without the consent of the owner, agent, or occupant of the property. Section 2804 prohibits the painting or posting of any handbill or sign on utility poles, street signs, curbs, or other public property.
That's right.
Now, was that summarizing the way the ordinance is enforced?
Yes, that's true, with the only exception that, indeed, some of the utility poles, although used by the public, are private property because they belong to privately owned utilities. However, in a general sense, Section 28.03 relates to private property and permits signs on private property, assuming that the owner of that property or someone in control of that property consents to the attachment of a sign on that property in Section 28.04.
But the utility may not consent to signs on its poles.
No, that is correct. The utility may not consent to signs.
It doesn't say that in the
The utility, it's not a part of this record. Public utilities in California, private utilities in California, are governed by rules and regulations of the Public Utilities Commission of the state, and the Public Utilities Commission prohibits the attachment of anything to the upright poles for safety purposes. That regulation is not in anywhere a part of this record.
Well, we're talking about the legality of these particular prohibitions. And you say that these two, one or the other of these, forbids signs on public utility poles, even if the utility gave its consent. Is that right?
That is correct. Section 28.04 prohibits the attachment of signs on any utility pole.
And some other section of the law or some other regulation prohibits the utility from giving its consent at all. That's what you suggest.
A state agency regulation prohibits them from giving its consent at all, but so does Section 28.04. It prohibits the attachment of signs to utility poles because the attachment of those signs causes safety hazards and adds to visual clutter. And this certainly the government may regulate
property. The kind of so-called public property that you're talking about in 2804 includes utility poles.
It includes the public property includes the publicly owned utility properties, but the section also prohibits attachment of signs to the utility poles that are owned by privately owned utility companies. Because the items of property that are regulated by Section 28.04 are not part of a public forum, this Court needs to look to see whether or not the regulation is reasonable in light of the circumstances that the city faces, and whether or not it leaves open ample channels or avenues of communication. And indeed, the ordinance meets both prongs of those tests. It is certainly reasonable because it directly relates to the achievement of important and significant government interests. If signs cause a safety problem, or if signs result in clutter, which mars the visual environment, then certainly the most logical, most direct, and really the only effective way of eliminating those problems is by prohibiting the attachment of those signs which cause the problem. This ordinance does that. This ordinance also leaves open several ample avenues of communication. It leaves open several traditional uses of the streets and sidewalks, giving of public speeches, holding of parades, distribution of handbills, door-to-door distribution, and it also permits signs to be posted on private property and it permits signs to be held, carried by people in the streets. It doesn't prohibit any of those things. All it does is prohibit the attachment of signs to those items of property which are enumerated in the ordinance. In addition to that, another section of the Municipal Code, section 62.132, which is found in an appendix to the appellee's brief on page A2 in that appendix, permits street banners to be attached to the tops of the lighting standards that are found in the streets. This does permit one use of the public property located in the street for expressive purposes under circumstances where the city has determined the problems of traffic safety and visual clutter do not exist. The city would like to reserve the 5 minutes remaining for rebuttal.
Mr. Alpin, is the sidewalk a public forum in your view?
The sidewalk is indeed a public forum. It is a place where people gather to get from one place to another and also where they gather to discuss public issues.
But if they gather and block traffic?
If they gather and block traffic, then the city could certainly enforce an ordinance, which would be a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction.
So it isn't a place that was established as a public forum for communication, was it?
One of the purposes of sidewalks...
Is the purpose to transport people and things from one place to another?
That's one of its purposes.
Is it not the primary purpose?
It may even be the primary purpose, but one of its purposes, just like the streets certainly, is for people, as long as they don't block the use of the sidewalk by people who want to get from one place to another, a place of discussion. That does not mean, however, that the concrete, the actual physical concrete, is a place where people can make drawings or tape on their signs. It means that the place where people stand, in which they stand, is the public forum rather than the physical property itself.
Mr. Canterbury.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Section 28.04, as it is enforced by the Los Angeles Police Department, constitutes an absolute ban on all temporary signs on all public property. As such, it is a prior restraint on an important form of political expression. That form is the temporary campaign sign that has been with us for centuries.
Do you agree that we should read the ordinance as applying only to public property?
The portion of the ordinance that we challenged on appeal was only section 28.04. We abandoned a challenge to 28.03, and we believe that the city is entitled to prohibit the posting on private property unless the campaign officials or election committee has the permission of private property owners to post signs.
And you don't think we should read 2804 as covering privately owned trees and shrubs?
I do not, Your Honor. It doesn't say that, and although the city has stretched this ordinance to include many meanings, I don't believe that up until today it has included that meaning.
But anyway, it's just 2804 that's involved.
Yeah. That's right. That's correct, Your Honor.
And so you're saying that the city may not close down the public property to these signs.
That's correct, Your Honor. It may regulate the placement of.
I don't quite understand, Mr. Canterbury. Certainly on its face, 2804 is not limited to installations on the public property, is it? It says no person shall post or otherwise affix any handbill or sign going down there upon any tree, shrub. Doesn't that include trees and shrubs on private property?
It's really unclear from the record, and I don't know how it is enforced. I think the part of the problem
here.
Well,
how do I read it? Just looking at the face of it.
I would agree, Your Honor, that reading does lend that interpretation of prohibition on that type of property. Frankly, we've
assumed. But you're overbred. This is a facial attack, isn't it?
It is a facial attack, but our complaint makes it clear that we are also attacking it as it is interpreted by.
As applied. As, well.
As applied.
Well,
yes.
You, I take it you're the thrust of your argument is not overbreadth, but the fact that even if it were limited strictly to public property, it's invalid.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That there's public interest just isn't sufficient to.
That's correct.
Even if it were limited strictly to public property, which you think it is. Mm-hmm. Well, at least that's what you said.
I do think that as enforced, and from the record that we have before us, that the issue here, in my mind, is whether it can ban all signs on public property.
Yes. In any event, that's the way you want, that's your submission, as the way we should decide this case.
Yes, that as interpreted and as enforced by the police department. I think part of the confusion stems from the police department's interpretation of the section, and that's Exhibit B to the complaint that was read earlier, that the police department has its own idea in Los Angeles what this ordinance means. And the police department believes that it prohibits all signs on all public property, and apparently as well, some trees and other types of objects off of public property and on private property.
I suppose on its face it doesn't cover all public property, does it? Such as parks and other areas.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I think that's one of the deficiencies, in a sense, in the ordinance. That is that it is under-inclusive. Los Angeles argues that the purpose of this ordinance is to protect the city's environment. If that were the case, one would suspect that objects that
were... Well, I thought it argued it had safety goals as well.
That's true, Your Honor. In fact, I think that a reading of the code leads one to suspect that that is the sole purpose that was in the minds of the legislature when it passed that ordinance. Because the objects that are listed are fire hydrants, traffic directional signals, and the like. Objects that no one is entitled to post political signs on.
What would you say about an ordinance that required a person to get a license before they'd put up any sign and the deposit of cash or a bond equivalent to $1 for every sign they put up to provide the cost of taking them down?
Mr. Chief Justice, I think that would be an impermissible restraint on the exercise of this type of political expression. I believe that some monitoring and perhaps even a reasonable permit system might in some situations be permissible.
Who's
a dollar a sign would be awfully expensive to conduct.
Well, suppose we make it 10 cents a sign then. Is it the amount that you're concerned with?
It is the amount, and it's the fact that candidates running for nationwide office or even statewide office would have to go into each town, determine what the particular permit requirements were, learn those, apply them, and post their signs after they posted their
bonds.
Who's
supposed to take them, bear the expense of taking them down?
Candidates should bear that expense.
Well, wouldn't that be a reasonable way to make the candidate bear the expense, 10 cents a sign to remove?
I suggest it would not, Your Honor, because there is no...
All right, we'll reduce it to 1 cent a sign.
The principle, I think, Your Honor, is that the candidate or the persons responsible for posting the signs should be made to take the signs down after the election, and if they don't, then a penalty may be imposed at that time.
Then proceed against them criminally?
At that time, that would be appropriate.
Well, Mr. Canterbury, supposing on the Chief Justice's hypothesis that the city has had a criminal statute, they just can't get convictions under it, it's hard to locate the candidates after the elections, so they decide to go with the Chief Justice's suggestion, and they can prove in court that this 1 cent or 10 cents that they require as a deposit is actually the cost to the city of having people come around after the election and take down candidates' signs that the candidates themselves forget about and don't take down. Do you still say the city can't do that?
I believe that that would bear some scrutiny, Your Honor, for this reason, that under that situation posited,
of course they do.
You would essentially have law-abiding candidates who took down their sign after the election, paying for the misfeasance of those who do not. I do think that an assessment might be appropriate in some cases, a reasonable assessment for the administration of the program itself, the sign program. If there's a permit or some monitoring to take place, presumably that will be of some cost to the city.
Well, would you put as part of the administration cost the cost of to the city of taking the signs down?
I would prefer that it not be. I would again, for the reason I mentioned before, I don't think that would be appropriate. In Baldwin versus Redwood City, in 1976 case decided by the Ninth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit did comment that reasonable fees and assessments might be permissible if the city can show that they reasonably relate to the administration of the sign program.
Mr. Canterbury, may I ask a question about the nature of the right that you claim exists? Assume there were no ordinance at all here, first of all, and you wanted to put up the sign that's shown on Exhibit V on page 136. It says yes on Proposition 10. And say someone opposed to Proposition 10 came along and just removed the sign because they were opposed to it and substituted a no on Proposition 10. Would you have any right to complain about that?
I couldn't complain to the city about that.
Could you complain to him?
Yes.
And he preserved your sign. He didn't damage it. He folded it up neatly and put it in a plastic case so it didn't hurt it.
Well, he's destroyed it for our purposes, Your Honor.
And he's assumed the same right that you... Is it the first one that gets there has a right to stay there forever? How long do you have the right to keep that sign up?
Well, you have a right to keep the sign up until the election has passed and the sign has served
its purpose.
The
first one getting there, in effect, acquires an easement in the premises.
I wouldn't go so far as to use the term easement, but I do believe that
supposing the person who got there first wanted to permanently advertise the sale of his home or something like that, or a permanent garage sale, he put a sign up there and said, I want to leave it there until I sell everything in the house.
Well, of course, that would be a form of commercial speech, which would not be as protected.
Isn't that protected, too?
It may be protected, but not to the same degree that political speech
is. This ordinance doesn't discriminate between the two.
This ordinance does not. It might well, but it does not.
In other words, you think that there's a right. Supposing early in a primary candidate, say now a Democratic candidate, wanted to put a sign up there and leave it up there for 10 months, would he have the right to keep it there for the entire period of the election?
I think the general rule would be that he would have a right to. I think that the candidate must make that decision ahead of time, yes.
Has a constitutional right to keep it there.
He has a constitutional right to use the property, yes. And I think he has a private right not to have his property destroyed.
And supposing the utility company, which owned the pole, said, we don't want the sign there, could it have taken it down? Say there's no ordinances at all, just property law concepts involved.
In that situation, I think not, Your Honor. I believe that public utilities are able to erect poles for the public benefit under the public charter, and they are, for our purposes, public utility poles. Los Angeles takes the same position.
You think that our cases would support the notion that a public utility is subject to the same obligation that you contend a city is by way of allowing signs to be posted on its property?
Your Honor, I think that Marsh versus Alabama does support that proposition, especially if it is found in any particular town that the utility poles are universally owned.
Well, there's a lot of water that's flowed under the dam since Marsh against Alabama, so far as our decisions are concerned.
In the shopping center cases, that's true, Your Honor, but I believe that the foundational underpinnings of Marsh would apply in the situation.
If you're right, why couldn't a candidate, after he's elected, looking forward to his next election, just change his sign that he had up during the campaign and says, John Jones is doing a good job as city councilman? And just leave it up all the time, just so that the people will keep his name in their mind.
Well, I think that he could. However, he risks...
Well, I know, but would it be... could the city take it down, consistent with your views?
No, Your Honor, the city could not unless that sign became tattered and worn or became a threat.
No, he keeps it fresh because he doesn't want to... He wants the public to respect him, so he keeps the sign fresh.
I have to answer that I believe that he would be entitled to do that.
So he can have permanently, by getting there first, he can permanently occupy that particular place on the on the crossbar.
No, Your Honor, perhaps that's the answer to this question. I only argue that temporary political signs should be given access to public property. Once a sign is placed for so long as to be characterized as permanent, that, I believe, is a different matter. Because
how long
that is
would
a,
that be? How long would it be to be characterized as permanent?
I can't give an arbitrary time period.
Well, the fellow wants to get reelected for the rest of his life, and he wants to keep his.
It's almost assured, Your Honor, that if he keeps his signs up, he will never be elected.
Uh-huh.
Our point here is that political signs are to a great degree self-regulating. Candidates post elections to win elections, post signs to win elections, not to lose them. And the candidate who has that in mind in a limited campaign budget, as most candidates do, will put his sign up during the times that will do him the most good, and that is the weeks before the election.
Could the signs be illuminated without violating any constitutional rights?
We don't contend that we would have any right to illuminate the signs if the illumination would involve running wires up the poles. Again, that would look more like a permanent sign, but more importantly, it would very likely interfere with the primary use of the utility pole.
I'm thinking, for example, about the type of signs that you sometimes see on highways that are illuminated when light hits them, have reflector lights so that people can read them at night as well as in the daytime. Just wondering whether any limitations on the type of signs that could be put up. You say that self-regulation, I think, is a good deal to that. But apart from that, you have some eccentric candidate who could put any type of sign up. I take it under your argument.
Well, Your Honor, again, I think that the answer lies in whether the sign constitutes any hazard to the public, interferes with traffic and the like. It cannot, I contend, be pulled down because the city doesn't find it attractive.
I think the Court of Appeals has suggested some limitation in size. Would you accept that?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
While we're talking about the court's decisions, there has been a good deal of discussion as to whether this ordinance covers private property. Did I misread the decisions below? Both of them that treated the ordinance 2804 as relating only to public property.
That's been the assumption in this case from the very start.
And the opinions expressly so say.
Yes, Your Honor.
The first paragraph of Judge Nelson's opinion refers to 2804 relating to public property. And on page 18A, paragraph 18 of the trial court's findings of fact, one of the other means available was stated to be the posting of signs on private property. So I think you've already agreed that the case was tried on the basis that this ordinance was limited to public property.
Yes. I believe that is the case.
And yet in your brief, Mr. Canterbury, you rely on the policy statement of the police department, and you quote it. And the quote is, Los Angeles Municipal Code prohibits the unauthorized painting or posting of any handbill or sign upon public or private property, end quote. And you rely on that, apparently.
Your Honor, the reason that that was quoted was to illustrate that the police department considers 2804 to ban all signs on public property. That was the reason for
it. It may be, but it says more than that.
Well,
posting of any handbill or sign upon public or private property.
Your Honor, that is the case, and the ordinance might be more offensive than I've thought it to be until today.
I take it the only thing you're concerned about at all in the ordinance is the restriction on the use of the power lines and specifically the cross arms.
Well, Your Honor, that is the type of property that my clients have traditionally posted these signs on, and they undertook
but
this.
But I thought you agreed, or said anyway, that you agreed that no one had a right to post any kind of a sign on a fire hydrant and some of the other items listed here.
I do agree, Your Honor. But the complaint alleges that my client posts signs over the crossbar in the way depicted at page 137 of the record.
How about the utility poles themselves?
No, Your Honor. We don't contend.
We don't do that, but others do.
Others do.
Some of the dirty.
And an ordinance prohibiting
that.
Some of the
candidates who don't want to get elected.
That's right. In fact, Your Honor, the record shows that most of the signs posted in that way are not signs at all. All they are 8x11 flyers that are glued or tacked or stapled onto the vertical shaft of the pole itself. Our signs, by contrast, were actually designed by Mr. Daly of COGS, one of the plaintiffs in this case, as an alternative to that kind of abusive posting. And the sign that's depicted at page 137 of the record shows how the sign can be placed on the public property.
But your submission here is that I take it that prohibition of signs or posters on utility poles is also unconstitutional.
No, Your Honor. Our argument here is that
if the ordinance just related to utility poles, you wouldn't be here.
Now we.
You would think that ordinance was constitutional.
In fact, I think that it probably would be. Yes.
Okay.
The reason is this: the district court found that signs posted on the vertical shaft of the pole itself created a danger to repairmen, because in climbing the pole, they may slip on a sign posted on that pole. And again, the reason that our signs are posted on the cross arms is to avoid that problem. We asked in interrogatory number 11, which is part of the record in this case, whether the signs of the type posted by my client created what are described as the overhead problems by the police department and city maintenance folks. And they admitted in that answer that, in fact, our signs don't constitute that type of a hazard.
You'd be satisfied then if the court said, agreed with you the ordinance could not be applied to the crossbars but was perfectly constitutional as applied to any other public property?
No, I think that again would be too broad. Of course, the court will, if it decides to affirm the Ninth Circuit decision, this case will go back and Los Angeles will have an opportunity to follow the guidelines set down by the Ninth Circuit and regulate signs according to size or placement. I believe that signs can be severely limited in aesthetically sensitive.
Well, you could make them so small that nobody could read them.
Well, that would be, we have a right to post.
No, but as soon as they become large enough to read from any distance, they
that's a problem.
You can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Again, the question is one of reasonableness. The size, we should be able to post signs of a sufficient size so that the name of the candidate and the office he's running for, which is the theme of these campaign signs, can be clearly read.
I asked your friend, and he wasn't sure, but I'll ask you. In the election, any election in recent times that you're aware of, what was the maximum number of candidates who were appealing to the voters in Los Angeles?
I would have no idea.
10 candidates, 100 candidates?
I simply don't know. There are many elections, local elections in Los Angeles and other cities.
Do you have written ballots or voting machines out there?
We have voting machines.
And you're from San Francisco anyway.
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Incidentally, San Francisco allows signs on public utility poles and has
taking quite a risk, a San Francisco lawyer going to litigate in Los Angeles?
Well, the district court apparently came to that conclusion.
you lost. You hadn't, but another Los Angeles person bailed you out.
Well, no one seriously questions that if a city wants to permit these things, there's no barrier to their permitting them. The only question before the court is whether there is a constitutional right of a candidate or even of a commercial enterprise to post signs on public property.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm not sure that I understand the question, however.
Well, if you can do it, so can everybody.
Oh, absolutely. anyone running for public office.
And your position is that that clutter, that impact on the environment is something the city has no right to control.
Well, I think that first of all, I would not characterize it myself as clutter, but assuming that's the way we wish to characterize
it. I'm just looking at the pictures that you put in the record.
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, those pictures, in large part, were put in by Los Angeles. And going back to the record, the picture depicted at page 137, I think illustrates our point very vividly. Depicted in the foreground is a temporary political sign. I don't think that the photographer intended to illustrate this point, but in the background, there is a virtual montage of permanent signs that are much more offensive and much more a clutter than the temporary political sign in the foreground. These signs, billboards, laundromat signs, fast food signs, are located they're not attached to public property, but they all are placed over public property and certainly within public view.
Of course, the city's power to regulate the right of a person, a property owner, to put a sign on his own property may be a good deal more limited than the city's right to regulate the right of others to put signs on property owned by the city. Don't you agree with that?
Well, it is our position that the opposite is true, that Los Angeles may very well be able to pass a comprehensive plan to address the visual pollution problem in Los Angeles and take under consideration the visual impact of signs on private property and public property. It hasn't done so, and nothing in this case suggests
you're,
it has.
You're saying the city is freer to, or has more latitude in telling me if I own a Tasty Freeze along the street, that I can't put up a sign on the building that says Tasty Freeze. You say that very likely it can do that, but that it cannot tell someone from 50 miles away that he cannot put a sign up on a city-owned utility pole.
That is our position, Your Honor.
Could the city of Los Angeles prevent you from putting one of these signs in the public square?
In the public square?
Mm-hmm.
It would depend on the public square. If the public square were not a park or an aesthetically sensitive...
Don't you and I know what a public square is? I mean, how do
you
condition it?
I'm trying to conjure one in Los Angeles so
you
that I can make
the... You're trying not to answer the question.
No.
Well, you pick what you think is a public square in Los Angeles.
Your Honor...
My question is, can you bar public signs in that square that you pick?
The answer depends on whether that square or park is aesthetically so sensitive that its character would be destroyed by the placement of signs on or around it. If the character would not be impaired, then I think that we have the right to post a sign on or near that public square.
You used two quite different tests. You first said, would it be destroyed, and secondly said, would it be impaired? Which is the test you recommend?
I think if the character is substantially impaired.
Substantially impaired.
Had more time to think about that, Your Honor.
How about the public square in front of the courthouse?
I think that would be permissible, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
That would be permissible. I don't think a sign could be posted.
You could put up a sign in the public square of the courthouse of every candidate that's running for office, assuming you'd have that much room.
I don't believe any sign can be placed on the courthouse or on the steps, even for a period of 24 or 48 hours. But if there are public utility poles that line the street in front of the courthouse, and for the same reason that this court decided that in Grace that persons can walk around the courthouse.
I'm saying that they could pass a law, could they pass a law saying no signs in the public square in front of the courthouse without the city's permission. Is that a constitutional ordinance?
I suspect it would not be, Your Honor, because I don't believe that the signs would substantially impair the character of the place.
You mean you put up any sign in front of the courthouse you want to put up?
Not any sign, no. The basis, the thrust of our argument is that reasonable regulation is quite appropriate.
So the aesthetic values of the city are to be determined by each individual?
No, Your Honor, again, I believe that reasonable regulation is appropriate.
The city has a hearing and they decide that multiple signs of multiple colors involving multiple problems would destroy the aesthetic value, if not of the whole city, at least of the courthouse lawn, that would be unconstitutional.
I don't take that position absolutely, Your Honor. If the city had made such findings, it may very well be within its right to do that. There is no evidence of such findings in this case.
Let's go back to the priority matter that Justice White mentioned earlier. Suppose one enterprising candidate with considerable cash goes out very early with a crew of people and he covers every pole of every utility, all the places that are involved here, all the cross wires, all the space, with his own name, vote for. And there's no room for anybody else.
I believe that the city can regulate against that type of abuse.
Now, the city deals with this when it happens. How do they deal with it when it happens? You mean they have to draw an ordinance that in advance recites standards that would enable the police to deal with that particular problem?
I think it should, yes. In San Francisco, for example, the ordinance reads that only one sign for any one candidate can be posted on a public utility pole. That's the answer, I believe, to that question.
Mr. Canterbury, I take it you really aren't defending the judgment of the Court of Appeals, except insofar as it applies to the places you want to put signs on.
Well, I hope I am defending the.
Well, did they declare this statute unconstitutional on its face?
Yes, they did.
I thought you were suggesting that it's only unconstitutional as applied to these crossbars.
No, Your Honor, I take both positions, that it's unconstitutional as an overbroad restraint because it prohibits the placement of signs on the objects listed, which include the wires, non-current wires.
That isn't overbreadth. That's just you have to say that you can object to that directly. But are you saying it's unconstitutional on its face because it also regulates some other property or what?
No, Your Honor, our basic position is that as interpreted by law...
I thought you agreed. Do you think the Court of Appeals wouldn't allow the ordinance if it applied only to the utility poles, would it? And you say, and I thought, that a utility pole ordinance would be quite constitutional.
Now, again, the distinction is whether the sign is allowed to be placed on the crossbar mm-hmm. out of harm's way,
mm-hmm.
or
yes.
whether the ordinance prohibits the posting of signs on the pole itself. And
you don't think any of your submission today is inconsistent with the Court of Appeals?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, no.
Okay.
If it is, I don't see it.
Right, well, do you have anything further, Mr. Alperin?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, we do have some comments in rebuttal. First of all, with regard to the Chief Justice's question of the number of candidates, although I do not know the precise number, even a guess on the number of candidates who ran at the time Mr. Vincent ran, we can tell the Court that it's been our experience that normally for all of the offices we do have several dozen candidates. I do remember back
in... How many?
Several dozen.
Several dozen.
Maybe anywhere from 18 up to a larger number. In 1969, for the first time, candidates ran for seven districts of a community college board. there were more than 100 candidates who ran for those positions, so that there can very well be quite a large number of candidates running in city elections. We also need to understand that in the even-numbered years, candidates are running for county office, state, legislative office, statewide office, congressional office, and for president and vice president. We know that in a city as large as Los Angeles, there are quite a number of legislative districts. There are quite a number of candidates who are running. So this isn't just a phenomenon that creeps up every time we have a city election. It also is a phenomenon that we have every time we have a statewide or national election. And it's a phenomenon that we have all of the time, because not only do we have candidates, we have people with other views, and we have people with commercial messages. And indeed, these signs are not self-regulating, as we know, because there are indeed so many of them. And indeed, because there are so many of them, and because the city is so large and spread out, and there are so many roadways and objects on which these signs can be attached, there is really no way in which the city can reasonably and effectively regulate in any other way. If we find that there are, let's say the city was to say that you could have one sign on every three poles. The city doesn't believe that that's reasonable, because, for one reason at least, because what if the city finds three signs on one pole? How in the world is the city going to know which sign was there first and therefore which two signs the city could remove? Is the city required to hold a hearing as to thousands of poles where it finds more than one sign on those poles in order to determine which sign was entitled to be there? Certainly that cannot be the case. Certainly any other regulation would be unreasonable, unworkable, unpoliceable, would impose terrific and expensive administrative burdens on the city. The court should well recognize that in this area, the city of Los Angeles is not like the city of San Francisco. If the city of Los Angeles believes that it needs different regulations because of conditions that are specific to the city of Los Angeles, which is certainly much larger and much more populous and much different from the city of San Francisco, that the city of Los Angeles ought to be entitled to pick those means which it believes will best solve its problems. And as long as the city is not limiting speech so that there are not alternative channels of communication, and so long as it's not saying to one candidate, I'll let you put up your signs, and to another candidate, I won't let you put up your signs, if it's not doing that, then the city ought to be entitled to enforce, to enact and keep and enforce this regulation, especially because those objects which the city prohibits signs on are not a public forum. This court ought to reverse the decision of the Ninth Circuit, which found the ordinance unconstitutional on its face and granted summary judgment on the constitutional issue to the plaintiffs. The reasons that we cited in our briefs and the arguments today, the city submits that its ordinance is unconstitutional and urges this court to reverse the decision of the Ninth Circuit.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in